This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Let's go. Carlin versus Joe. Noon to 3 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Progressive Insurance. It's great to have you with us today. He's Q Myers. I'm Joe Fortenbaugh. A lot to sort through. The New York Knickerbockers back in action tonight. 4.5-point favorites over the Indiana Pacers. We'll get you all your thoughts, all our thoughts on that in the very near future. We've got hockey action tonight. We got to start looking ahead to some of these basketball matchups. There's some really good bets to be made. Q, we begin hour number two with a very simple question. I hope you're ready for it.
Uh-oh.
I'm really going to hang that out there because I also want to remind you that there's a hockey doubleheader tonight. 7:30, Bruins-Panthers game two. Bruins with the upset in game one. Let's see if the Panthers bounce back. That's going to be followed by game one of Oilers-Canucks. Both of those will be on ESPN. Oilers-Canucks, I don't want to say bet the over, but it feels like that could be an absolute shootout of a series. So just file that one away. If you like that style of hockey, that's going to be the series for you. There are some wars, some real physical wars. There are some shootouts. There are some grinds. Stanley Cup playoffs this year has a little bit of everything for the people out there. Here's a question, Q Myers. Was thinking about this morning. Of all the teams left in the NBA playoffs, so if you are not in the NBA playoffs right now, you do not qualify for this conversation. Best tandem left. Best 1-2 punch. Best dynamic duo. Who would it be? Batman and Robin doesn't need to be an even situation there, but who would you go with? Because we were thinking about this morning. I ran this by some people, and as different names popped up, I thought to myself, well, no, there's a flaw here. And they'd say, all right. And then we'd keep moving it around, and I'm wondering where it stands. And for those driving around, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776, who's the best tandem right now left in the playoffs?
I mean, I got to go with recency bias, right? I got to be a prisoner of the moment. At least I feel like it. As I went through and I wrote down five or six different tandems, and I'm like, no. So I'm going to rock with the Ant-Man and Cat. I'm going to rock with Ant-Man and Cat, and that might not necessarily even be the 1-2 punch, right? But it is a 1-2 punch in Minnesota, of course, led by the Ant-Man. But I think Cat is actually playing a role that is really well-suited for him, where he is not the alpha dog that he at one time thought he was. Now I feel like he's a better Robin, and he's showing that right now.
What made you take Cat over Gobert?
Because Gobert is not the guy that's going to score that much. Like, the Ant-Man or the Cat will step out and he'll hit the three-pointers. He'll let you know he's the best big man shooting the three-pointer, right? I mean, so he's just more active when it comes to shooting. But defensively, Gobert is fantastic, as we know.
The fact that Minnesota won without Gobert probably hurts his case a little bit,
too.
It's not meant to hurt his case, but, you know, we could bring that up. That's fascinating because a lot of people are going to look at that and be like, yeah, Ant's incredible. And then they're going to look at Karl-Anthony Towns and think, all right, well, some of these other tandems out there, there's some risk with Towns. Towns can score. Towns can shoot the three. Towns has been very good in this role. It's one of these guys that they just never gave up on him. They never traded him. They never parted ways. They just eventually found the best way to fit him. And it was just the, you're not going to be the alpha face of the franchise guy.
I never liked that role for him, by the
way.
I never liked that alpha role for him. I always thought that, yeah, he's missing something, and he was. Anthony Edwards.
He was missing the actual alpha.
Yes.
Okay, so you go with those two. I think it's interesting. Cat has always been good for one or two really bad fouls a game, but he's been smart throughout the course of the majority of this postseason, not getting himself jammed up. I think that's a good one. What happens to Jokic and Murray? Like, the idea that coming into the playoffs, I think most would have looked at those two before anybody else got eliminated. Maybe you'd make the case for Durant and Booker. But of who's left, are we already checking out on them because they're in the 0-2 hole?
I got them fourth right now based off what I'm seeing.
Okay.
Right. I mean, again, you're saying who's the best tandem playing right now. And when the Joker puts up less than a triple-double, right, I'm wondering what's wrong with him. And when Jamal Murray's
clearly hurt.
Yeah. When Murray's sitting there on the bench throwing towels and heating pads, he's out of his mind right now. Like, he's not where he is, where he's fully focused and locked in. Minnesota's got him rattled. So I have to downgrade them a little bit. So I put him at four.
Okay. So number one, Anthony Edwards, Karl-Anthony Towns.
Yep.
Number four, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, based on a lot of what we've seen, and I can't fault you there, because outside of Murray's antics, he has been shooting extremely poorly throughout the majority
of
this postseason.
And he's hurt, too. I know he's hurt. Yep. I realize that. But it is what it is, and the games go on.
Where do we go number two?
I got SGA and Chet. And I think SGA could have.
Interesting.
I think you could have had multiple options there. But I'm a rock with Chet. I mean, hell, they're singing songs together on commercials. So, I mean, I got to, you know what I mean? Like, I got to rock with those guys, right? They know what pros want. So
Chet
I'm going to rock
over Jalen Williams.
Right. And I think that Chet just has the higher profile name, but Williams is playing fantastic.
That's great news for Oklahoma City. Because if you're sitting here arguing between two really good players for who's part of the tandem,
right,
and the guy left out is Jalen Williams, who I think shot 54% from the floor and over 40% from deep
balling
this season,
balling,
like that
dog,
might
balling
be that might be one of the most unknown players in this postseason that everyone should know.
Yep.
And that's what I love about this OKC team. As they continue to make waves and win games, people are going to stand up and notice some of these players. Like, Wendy was on with us a half hour ago. Lou Dort, the Dortcher Chamber, one of the great nicknames in all mm-hmm. of sports. His defense, what he did to Brandon Ingram in the previous round and what he's going to do to Luka, he's not going to stop Luka, but no one's asking any defender to stop Luka. Just don't let him go for a 50-burger. Don't
right
let him single-handedly beat us, and you've done your job. So number one for best playoff tandems, you have Karl-Anthony Towns alongside Anthony Edwards at the top. Number
yep
two is SGA and Chet Holmgren.
Yep.
Number four is Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. Who's number three?
Number three, I've got Tatum and Brown.
Tatum and Brown. So
number
the team
three
that's favored to win the NBA championship, the one of the most established tandems, they
yep
come in third right now, even though Jaylen Brown had a huge night last night, and this team's only lost one playoff game so far.
Because there's still always going to be questions. Until they get it done, Joe, what is going to be the question on this fine program and every fine program that we have up and down the dial on ESPN Radio? Can those two get it done together?
Okay.
Right? We hear that every single year. Not saying it's fair, not saying that it's a real good assessment, but that's something that we'll hear every single season until they actually achieve their goal.
The natural counter to that would be that Minnesota and OKC haven't done anything yet either, but
right
I still see where you're coming from. They're playing very well right now.
Mm-hmm.
A young team that hasn't necessarily gone to the playoffs and failed as the Celtics have,
right,
which means we're eventually holding that against them. Carlin versus Joe, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive can help you protect your home, auto, boat, motorcycle, ATV, RV, and more. And if something wasn't mentioned that you had in mind, find out if it can be covered at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, because it probably can be. He's Q Myers. I'm Joe Fortenball. Top playoff tandems right now. Anthony Edwards, Karl-Anthony Towns is your number one.
Yep.
SGA, Chet Holmgren, number two.
Yes, sir.
Tatum and Brown, number three. Jokic and
Jamal
Murray, number four.
Yep.
I haven't heard about Luka and Kyrie yet. I also haven't heard about Brunson and whoever his number two would be.
Well, because who's Brunson's number two?
That's a great question. What would it be? Josh Hart?
They got the Villanova three.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what they've got there in New York. And I would love to put Brunson into that mix, but because I don't know who their sidekick is. Again, you could say it's DiVincenzo. You could say it's Hart. I mean, you could insert player there. I mean, they really have a one and surroundings, right? And they don't have a bench, as we very well know. So I have Luka and Kyrie at number five, and I had to put Luka and Kyrie at number five because Luka's obviously compromised, and he's not playing at the level that you expect Luka to play. But, man, Kyrie is cooking. Kyrie is cooking with a K, baby. He is doing some things that only Kyrie – man, he dropped a dime. He slipped and fell, picked himself up, and then still spun and dropped a dime right in Luka's lap for a layup last night. Fantastic work.
Does this Dallas team to you feel like they're ever going to figure it out with Luka?
No.
Do they ever feel like they're going to put it together to the point where we sit here and we say to ourselves, you know what? This is the year for Dallas. It always feels like they're like a third part of the conversation as
right
we break down the Western Conference. And if they get hot and some things break their way, suddenly maybe Dallas is there at the end. And right when it looked like it could be breaking their way, Luka's now banged up and it looks like OKC could roll through them.
Well, remember how good Dallas was at one point when they had Brunson and Luka? Remember when that was a nice 1-2 punch,
yeah,
and then they decided that Brunson wasn't him, and then he went to New York and he's him, right? I mean, that was one bad decision. They can't get free agents. That's the problem. That's the question I always have about Dallas. As a guy that was in Central Texas for many years and covered the Mavericks, they have to trade. That's how they got Kyrie, was by way of trade. They had to draft and trade for Luka. They don't get quality free agents to go there, and that's always their big Achilles heel.
Jalen Brunson might not have the Robin that some of the other guys in the NBA playoffs have right now, but the Knicks still found a way to win game one, and they turned their attention to game two tonight against the Indiana Pacers. Knicks currently a 4.5-point favorite. That game one 2-minute report came out, and it shows that they may very well have been extraordinarily lucky to have survived that opener at MSG. We're going to explain that next. We're going to dissect the two-minute report. Q Myers, Joe Fornball, Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
With this one earlier in the week, we're going to go back to the well. Jalen Brunson under 8.5 assists. A little juicy, minus 160. Here's why we like it. The Pacers are more content to just let him bombs away, if that's even a phrase the kids use these days, which it absolutely is not. Like, they're more than content. It's obviously not working out well for teams that are letting him get his 40 every single night in the playoffs, but that's their mindset. And that's kind of how it's been all season long in these matchups against Indiana. 6 assists in game one, and then in the 3 regular season matchups against Indiana for Brunson, 6 assists, 1 assist, and 4 assists. This is a guy who's averaging far more than that, but styles make fights. And stylistically, this is a matchup where the Pacers are going to let him shoot more, and they're going to take away some of the facilitating. So let's take advantage of that in the prop market. Jalen Brunson under 8.5 assists.
Stolen by McBride, taken by Anunoby, dribbles towards midcourt, game one, goes to the Knicks, 121 to 117.
We're going to have to do a lot better than we did tonight, but just finding a way to win at the end, you know, and obviously there's a lot for us to work on and clean up.
We can't just win and sit back and relax. We got to continue to learn and be better. We knew we could have played better tonight, and they had our number for most of the night. We just made a couple more plays down the stretch, and so we just know that we need to be better because they're going to be better.
Report from game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals matchup between the Knicks and the Pacers was released. I mean, good God, it's everything we thought it would be and more. 1:19 to go in the game on a possession that ended with Knicks star Jalen Brunson making a game-tying jumper over Andrew Nembhard. Turner should have been called for a 3-second violation. Okay, they missed that one. That's on the Pacers. 53.6 seconds to go. Just prior to the incorrect kickball violation, Dante DiVincenzo should have been called for an offensive foul against Naismith as he, quote, clamps his arm and prevents him from disengaging. 52 seconds remaining. With the score tied and Indiana starting a fast break, Naismith should not have been called for a kickball violation as noted in the last two-minute report. This call cannot be challenged. Fantastic. 10 seconds to go. On Indiana's last offensive possession, down by 4 points, Turner should have been called for another offensive foul a few seconds before Halliburton turned the ball over as the big man, quote, extends into DiVincenzo's path and delivers contact with his side during the screen. How do you think they go through these things before we even dissect any of this? You think they sit around with some cocktails and just kind of slow this thing down, have some jokes, treat it like Mystery Science Theater 3000? You remember that? The gumball machine, the dog, the human?
Do you not remember that? I don't know. No,
you lost me on that one,
brother. You lost me on that one, brother.
I know what you're talking about.
Hey, man, you know that? You're a lot younger than us.
I know, but like I learned, I took a film class in school, and we watched a lot of that stuff.
You watched a lot of Mystery Science Theater 3000?
It came up, yeah.
I played outside. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's fair.
I had to come back in when the light came on, the street light.
I actually like the idea.
It's a good rule.
I like the idea of like some kind of broadcast where you're just watching tearing everything apart in a basketball game.
Alternate broadcast. Yeah. By the way, your boy's doing one of those next week for the PGA Championship.
Oh, let's go.
ESPN released that today. Will be 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2. All four rounds of the PGA Championship on ESPN. We'll be doing an alternative betting broadcast. You will watch me bet golf live for 2 hours times 4 days, 8 hours a week. I don't know. I don't know about that. I don't know if I want my parents tuning in. I don't know if I want my wife tuning in, my in-laws.
I mean, those first 10 points Instagram lives, those are interesting to watch. So I can only imagine two hours.
I got a feeling family members could be watching this thing and be like, oh, this is what it is? We did not think it was this. It very much is this. Neither here nor there at the moment. So we go through all this. What do you make of it? Last two-minute report. Like, a lot of mistakes here. A lot of crucial mistakes.
Right, but they're just admitting what they did wrong that was already known, right? it's just adding insult to injury. Like, I never really quite understood why this has to be made public. Yeah, you could share it with the team and be like, okay, hey, this is where we went wrong. You were right about this. Okay, we'll clean this up. Whatever the case may be. But just to go ahead and release it, it's almost been like, yeah, we did it, and this is how we did it. Ha, gotcha. Right? I mean, it's like I said, it's already kicking you while you're down. Like, I don't need – look, I'm already doing bad, right? I'm already trying to figure out how to get back into game two, so I'm already in a bad position, and then you want to make it worse by telling me everything that you did wrong to help me get in the position I'm in right now. Like, you assisted me in feeling the way I'm feeling right now, and now you're going to come back and tell me, by the way, Q, if you don't remember how I helped you, this is how it went. That's worse. That makes it worse.
No, you make a good point. I've heard Greeny rail against this. I've heard a lot of it. Stephen A's railed against this before. Everyone makes great points as to why does this get made public? Why do they even have this? I love this. I'm glad they have it. And I don't think it's going anywhere. This, again, plays into the whole thing that this is an entertainment product before it's a sport. And that's important for people to realize. Football is not a sport. It is an entertainment product. Same as hockey, same as basketball, same as baseball, same as all the sports. They are sports, but primarily they function as entertainment for the viewers. And people want to talk about the entertainment they see. You come out of a movie, you want to discuss it, right? You want to discuss the performances. Same thing when you come out of a concert, same thing when you come out of a game. And by putting this out there, it is an opportunity for us to have more wide-ranging discussions about this topic. And for the NBA, that's a good thing. Like right now, we as radio hosts could be sitting here saying, all right, what do we want to get into? There's some NFL stuff. There's some NHL stuff. There might be something going on in baseball. We have all these options we have to choose from that we talk about during the course of this three-hour radio show. This is the NBA giving us something to talk about. And it's
we're going to talk about
NBA.
It anyway, though. We're going to talk about all their mistakes anyway.
Right,
I don't need them to actually document what they did wrong. It's like, hey, honey, you know when I started cheating on you with your friend? This is when it first happened. Remember that cookout that we had in April? Yeah, that's when I first got her attention. Like, you don't need that. The obvious deed is already done.
But this is the second day we're discussing it, right? Like yesterday we discussed it coming off the game. Now we discuss it one more time. Then we have the game tonight. We will discuss what happens in tonight's game tomorrow. It keeps it alive. That's the beauty of this. It keeps the story alive. I mean, if you're the Pacers, how do you feel about this? It really just confirms everything you already knew, right?
It makes you angry. It makes you mad. I don't want to be mad. Joe, I want to get over being angry. I want to get into the stage of, okay, recovery. Now what do I do next in my next step? Instead, you're keeping me in the cesspool of anger that I'm already mad at because I know that you did me wrong, but now you're confirming it. Yeah, I put it in front of me. That's worse.
By the way, what do you make of this situation for the Knicks now? They've already been working a short bench. They're playing six, maybe six and a half guys, essentially, throughout the course of the playoffs. Mitchell Robinson looks like he's done. He's going to be out, what, 6 to 8 weeks before they reevaluate him? Right. So that means Hardenstein's going to get a lot more minutes. But he was already playing like 36 minutes a game. Hint, hint, I'd play the double-double tonight, and I would go over his rebounds because of all that, but neither here nor there. Like, how much longer can the Knicks get away with this? Like, get away with these short lineups, leaning on Brunts in the drop 40-plus every night before this all goes belly up?
Good question, Right? I mean, again, that's one of the biggest Achilles heels, I think, for the Knicks is that they don't have that bench that they can rely on. They've got everyone playing 45-plus minutes, and at some point I think the gas is going to run out of the tank, but they seem to think that they've got an e-vehicle and that they've recharged and they're good to go.
I mean, like, people keep making the comparison of Brunson to Iverson. Iverson was able to take him all the way to the finals.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't run into a Boston Celtics-like opponent in the Eastern Conference that season. He was the top dog. They were the number one team. He won the MVP, and the trade for Mutombo put everything over the top that season. But ultimately, you watch him play, and it's fantastic what you see from Brunson. It's remarkable.
Right.
And the way the Knicks have found out how they can go 45-plus minutes a night from their starters and gut these games out, it's nothing short of amazing. It's easy to root for a team like that. But eventually it's going to go belly up. How competitive, I guess what I'm asking, can the Pacers make this series? Like, Halliburton has got to get it going at some point. He was a disaster in game one.
Right, and they still almost won.
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. I mean, yeah, I think that this is going to be a very competitive series, and that's the one thing that I guess it's the kind of the good and the bad with the approach that the Knicks are taking. They're used to this. That's what they've been doing. I mean, their series with the Sixers, that was a knockout, drag-out fest. I mean, that was just stand in the middle of the ring and exchange blows. Like, that's what they did, and so they're kind of built for it. I just don't know if they could sustain it, right? But right now, I shouldn't question them because they've been able to do it. So they're doing it, and until they can't do it anymore, then I guess we should just roll with how they're rocking.
What do you make of this 4.5-point spread now that we're finally getting into the important part of the conversation here? What are you doing tonight? Pacers a little bit more competitive tonight. They keep it tight. The Knicks, every single Knicks, all five Knicks wins have come by an average of 4.4 points per game. Their biggest win in the playoffs was by seven. It's not exactly like the Knicks will beat you, but they're not going to blow you out. These are going to be tough games.
Right. They're going to let you hang around. I honestly think the Pacers are going to go and get the dub tonight. Straight
really?
Up.
Really?
I think, I mean, again.
Plus 165 on the money line. Everyone note that.
Their number one goal was to get to Madison Square Garden and steal a game. They almost stole a game in game one, and they probably feel like the game was stolen from them. So all they've got to do is say, hey, let's stick to the script. We had some areas that we need to clean up. Halliburton, I'm going to need a little bit more from you. Let's go and get that extra Kool-Aid, right? Get extra red, a little extra sugar in. I'm going to need a little something more from you, and then we'll be ready to roll, and I think they'll be fine.
I will tell you, there's been significant money coming in on the under in this game. This game popped up as high as 222.5. That was this morning. It's down to 218.5. What people are looking at, game one was played at a very fast pace, fastest pace of any Knicks game the entire series. That's natural. You're going to see higher paces in this series than you would have seen in the Sixers series because the Pacers like to play fast. But both teams shot over 50% from the field. The Knicks shot like 47% from deep. Thought process here is that the shooting is going to fall off for the Knicks, possibly a little bit for the Pacers. Games played a little bit slower as each team comes up with a counterpunch, and we get a lower scoring game. Just a nugget.
And
just
that's
something
what the
to throw
want.
Out there for the people. More of those today, ESPN2, as ESPN Bet Live returns at 5 p.m. Eastern.
That's what the Knicks want.
Yeah.
They want that slower pace. They want that lower scoring game. That game that they won in the 100 and teens, that's not their MO, right? That's not what they want.
It's not Knicks basketball.
No, they want to be around 95, 100 points a game. The Pacers are like, let's get to 115 and take our chances. That's what their goal's got to be. Just like I used to say, the Warriors, all they got to do is get to 100 first and they'll win. They need to aim at 115 and take their chances.
There's some talk right now that a major scheduling change could be coming for the National Football League. We're going to get to the bottom of that next. He's Q Myers. I'm Joe Fortenbaugh. Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
Hockey doubleheader tonight, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, Bruins and Panthers, game two. Panthers in an 0-1 hole. I like a sizable performance from the Florida Panthers tonight, followed by game one of Oilers Canucks. That's all on ESPN. The hockey playoffs have been remarkable this season. So jump in. Dip your toe in the hot tub for a little bit. If the water feels nice, maybe stay for a few minutes. Q Myers, Joe Fortenbaugh, Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio. Dan Graziano, ESPN NFL insider, kind enough to spend some of his time with us today. Graz, we always appreciate it. Let's begin with some commentary on behalf of Bengals quarterback Joe Burrow, talking about how he thinks it could benefit the NFL, specifically the players, to incorporate a second bye week into the schedule, especially if the NFL wants to move from 17 games to 18 games. Do we think something like this could be on the horizon?
The 18-game season or the second bye week? Like
both.
What exactly? Like the 18-game season, the current CBA that was signed in 2020 and runs through 2031 expressly prohibits the expansion of the regular season beyond 17 games. So if the NFL wanted to do this, it would have to renegotiate the CBA midstream. So the question becomes, how badly does the NFL want an 18th game? What are they willing to give up for it? And is the Players Association, which is under new leadership since that deal was signed in 2020, is the Players Association willing to engage them? What would they demand in return? And obviously, I don't think a second bye week is necessarily something you demand in return. I think it would be like a condition, you know, a condition of the 18th game in order to manage through the season. This is how it would have to be. So I don't see the Players Association giving in to an 18th game unless they get money, right? Like unless they get a larger share of the revenue pot than they currently have. And if you're not going to give them that, then I think the conversation is probably pretty short. So the question will become, how badly does the NFL want to move to an 18th game? And if the players are open to it, then what form does that take? Certainly a second bye week in that scenario would make a lot of sense, especially if the league's goal, which I think a lot of people believe it has been for a long time, is to play the Super Bowl on President's Day weekend. Add an 18th week, an extra bye week, all of a sudden you're there.
Speaking of bye weeks, most people believe that the NFL schedule was going to be released on Thursday this week. It's found out yesterday it's going to get pushed back till next week. Do we know why it's been pushed back to the 15th?
I don't know. I think, you know, it become the reason they don't announce this until right before it happens is because it's hard. Like you get the schedule set and then you send it out and then like 10 teams put their hands up and say, well, that doesn't work because we have a concert that night in our stadium and we need to. So I think it just took them this long to do it. I'm sure that, you know, as we get closer to it and after it, we'll be able to dig in a little bit and find out specifically what the last minute hangups were. But yeah, I had heard, as you guys had, I was kind of expecting it later this week. And now it sounds like it'll be the middle of next week. It's not that long a delay, really, when you think about it. But yeah, I think my sense of it is it's just, you know, there are always last-minute changes as a result of some of the requirements that the cities and the teams and the stadiums have in terms of conflicts.
ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano with us here on Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio. Boomer Esiason said something interesting on his morning show in New York today about the idea that it could be Netflix that jumps into the Christmas Day NFL schedule. We've seen a lot of streamers obviously get involved. Amazon has Thursday Night Football now. Peacock had a playoff game last year, and I think they're going to get the Black Friday game. Christmas is something that the NFL has been building up over the years, even as the date moves off the weekend. What do we know? Does it look like Netflix could be making a play here?
Well, I mean, that's beyond my, I don't know who the league is negotiating with and what the state of those things are. I do think it's logical to believe that one of the reasons the league has decided to play on Christmas this year, even though it's going to be on a Wednesday, which is patently absurd, is that maybe they have an idea of what they can get for it, right? So you have a couple years worth of experience here of playing on Christmas and delivering monster ratings that kind of blow out of the water anything the NBA was ever doing on Christmas. That used to be the NBA's day, right? So the fact that they're going to do it on a Wednesday tells me they feel like they'll get the ratings no matter what. And yes, there's certainly a dollar value attached to that if you're trying to sell that package. So, you know, Amazon is the big streamer that jumped in the last round of negotiations and got the Thursday night package, and I guess they got a playoff game this year and everything. But certainly the league is looking at broadening, as anyone would, the number of potential bidders on the rights to their games, because that's only going to make them more money. So, I mean, Boomer may have heard that somewhere. It's certainly possible. You've heard for years, Amazon, Netflix, Google, Apple, like who is going to be the next one to jump in with a big bid on NFL rights. And, you know, if it's Netflix, then good for the league. And I could explain, like, if they have a sense of who's going to bid on it and how much, then that could certainly go a long way toward explaining why they're playing on Christmas on a Wednesday.
Dan, what did you make of the whole report about Kirk Cousins and the Vikings, and he didn't want to sign there because they could be potentially drafting a quarterback in the first round, which Atlanta ultimately ended up doing? What did you think of and make of that whole scenario?
Yeah, I think the Vikings – so my understanding on the psychology of the Vikings is that they were trying to balance the idea of win now versus build for the future. And I guess the Falcons are feeling the same way, as it turns out. They just didn't tell Kirk. I think the Vikings were in the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes until the end, and just were not willing to offer the amount of guaranteed money the Falcons were. Is that because they've paid Kirk Cousins so much guaranteed money over the years and they felt like enough was enough? Is it because he's coming off injury? Is it because, you know, they feel like we can't go on like this forever? He's going to be 36. The Falcons made a very different decision than the Vikings did, but the Vikings have, ever since the new GM and coach got there a couple of years ago, they've sort of been of the mind that, like, you know, Cousins is not the long-term guy here just because of his age and where he is in his career. So I think they got to the point where they had the two first round picks. They knew what the quarterback landscape was going to be in the draft. They had their eye on a guy or two that they liked, and they felt like now was the time to make the move. I think they would have brought Cousins back if his demands for guarantees had not been as high as they were. But, you know, the fact that they weren't willing to go there meant that they did have their eye on the future anyway. And even if he had come back, he probably would have ended up in a situation similar to, oddly enough, the one he's now in Atlanta.
Adam Schefter had a report that the Falcons want to give Michael Penix, like, all the first-team reps in the preseason, preserve Kirk Cousins. Like, Graz, if Penix plays really well, dude, what ends up happening here?
You got me on here, and you're trying to ask me to make sense
right?
of the Falcons' decision-making around their quarterback plan. It doesn't make any sense because there's no consistency to it, right? You sign Cousins, and then 6 weeks later, you draft Penix with the eighth pick. Like, those decisions are counter to each other. You cannot possibly get the maximum amount of value out of the Cousins contract and the Penix rookie contract now. You've misallocated your resources. So whatever their plan is, Kirk is coming off a significant injury, an Achilles tendon tear. It may be that they want to work him back in slowly. But, you know, their plan is for Cousins to start this year, and maybe they feel like these are the only reps Penix can expect to get, because once the season starts, you know, the first-team quarterback will take the first-team reps. But it just gets to the issue of, like, they have created a very difficult situation for themselves that is only going to continue to be an issue here as long as they're both on the team. And they can say what they want about long-term vision and having a succession plan in place, but I think they've made it very difficult on their coaching staff.
Well, there was a situation in San Francisco around the draft with Brandon Ayuk, and could he be traded on draft day? He wasn't. He's back in San Francisco. Are these two sides any closer to a contract extension?
I think so. I mean, look, I think there's always been a chance that it would happen, and there still is. And I think, you know, when you saw before the draft some of the wide receiver deals come in, right, talking about Amon-Ra St. Brown, A.J. Brown, you know, guys like that, the receiver market at or toward the top end is beginning to move. And I think if you're Brandon Ayuk, you can look at the A.J. Brown deal and the Amon-Ra St. Brown deal and say, all right, well, how do we compare to those guys and therefore, what does the structure of the deal look like? The Niners have a top-heavy roster with a lot of guys with big cap numbers this year, and it would benefit them to do an extension, which would knock Ayuk's cap number down. But I think, as with a lot of these teams, Minnesota with Justin Jefferson, Dallas with CeeDee Lamb, et cetera, the Niners have kind of been waiting for the wide receiver market to reveal itself a little bit in terms of what these extensions would look like. I think you saw that start to happen right before the draft. I think you'll see it continue. I don't think we're going to go through an offseason without a Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb extension. But I think Ayuk, you know, it's a matter of how he feels like he falls into that picture. And I think with the picture clarifying, I think it's more possible than ever that he gets a deal. And remember, Debo, you know, has the big cap number, but they can get out of Debo's deal after this year. So if they sign Ayuk, they're kind of signaling that intention, I think.
Very interesting. ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano, gracious with his time as always. Graz, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, guys.
New elements developing in the Michael Jordan versus LeBron James debate. It's not really. There's something to it, but there's actually a much better angle on LeBron that I think a lot of people are giving him credit for. And it surfaced recently with some commentary from Kendrick Perkins, which kind of set the world on fire for a few minutes. That's something we're going to discuss next. Q Myers, Joe Fortenbaugh, Carlin versus Joe right here on ESPN Radio.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
This is the Carlin versus Joe podcast on ESPN Radio.
I wish LeBron James will retire. The more LeBron James continue to play the game of basketball, the more it's going to hurt his legacy, and the more it's going to continue to hurt his GOAT argument.
I think that LeBron would have more rings on his finger today if it hadn't been for the timing.
The acrimony, the friction, the divide, the fragmentation, all of those things play a role in contributing to one's greatness or lack thereof. Maybe that's the reason LeBron has 4 rings instead of 6.
I asked the great debate. Q Myers, Joe Fortenbaugh, Carlin versus Joe, ESPN Radio. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Kendrick Perkins, not scorched earth, set some people on fire the other day. Very interesting commentary regarding LeBron James, but there's a lot to sort through in level 2 and 3. That's the thing. People come right out. They look at the first part. There's a lot to discuss there. 2 and 3. We dig deep on this show, don't we, Q Myers?
We do. We dig very deep. Very deep.
Maybe
like as deep as they do at the barbershop every Saturday morning when I go get my haircut when we start talking about LeBron James and Michael Jordan. We go deep.
Love it. So let's start with the Kendrick Perkins audio from a couple days ago. ESPN NBA analyst. He's on First Take. He has this to say about LeBron James.
I hate to say it, but I believe this in my soul right now. I wish LeBron James will retire. The more LeBron James continue to play the game of basketball, the more it's going to hurt his legacy, and the more it's going to continue to hurt his GOAT argument. Because as long as he steps foot on that floor, every single season is going to be expectations of him of winning a championship. And when he don't do that, we're going to be looking at him and saying, well, what happened now?
You can react to that however you want. There's one counterpoint I would bring up that I think gets lost in the conversation at least a bit. Tell me if I'm off base here.
Okay.
The longer he plays at this level, he's really pushing the boundaries of human performance as we know them, right? Like, we watched Brady win Super Bowls, and I understand the championship element to it. I'm willing to discount that for a moment. Playing at a high level and going right up against Father Time for as long as LeBron has, and seemingly with enough left in the tank to do it for a few more seasons, that says something remarkable to me. Because in an era where guys break down routinely, and again, through no fault of their own, this isn't to blame anybody, but look at Joel Embiid, broken every single year, right? Like, look at what happened at the end of Kobe Bryant's career, someone who had the body type of not so much a big man like Joel Embiid, because we know big men can break down a little bit easier. But Kobe at the end of his career was battling a ton of different injuries. His body was failing him. It happens. You push yourself to the limit every single day. Your body can only handle so much. And with all of that over time, eventually you wear down. Like, James is in his 40s playing at an incredibly high level. To continue to do that moving forward, there aren't many guys that were able to pull that off. Like, Jordan fell apart at the end.
Right.
And this isn't to do the LeBron Jordan thing, but like, to watch this guy year after year go out there, put up the numbers he's putting up, have the success he's having this late into his career, he's pushing the boundaries of human performance farther than we've ever seen in the NBA. That says a lot for the legacy, in my opinion.
No, it says a ton for the legacy. The fact that he's still the best player on his team tells you all that you need to know. And that might be part of the problem, is that he's still the best player on his team. That's probably why the Lakers are not in the playoffs and they're watching like we're watching. But he is still the best player. He's playing at a very high level. I would agree with Perkins if he wasn't playing at the level that he's playing at right now. If he was going out there and he was Michael Jordan with the Wizards, then I would say, yeah, hey, you know what? Gonna hang it up. Gonna do something else. It's that time. But it's really not, and he's not hurting his legacy because he's balling still.
No, that's the thing. He's putting up crazy numbers. Like, Vince Young played really – or no, it's not Vince Young. Vince Carter, excuse me.
I was about to say, hold up now.
Yeah.
Hold up now, homeboy.
Those are two wildly different conversations.
Vince Young is pouring up some shots somewhere.
Vince Carter played for a long time. But again, at the end of Vince Carter's career, role player, limited minutes, right? Like, LeBron's playing big minutes, a big role, a marquee spot – at a very advanced age, and it looks really impressive in the process. Like, we watch smaller guys like Iverson eventually break down. You can have this argument any which way you want, but just the fact that he's doing what he's doing at this level, this late in his career, I think speaks volumes. Now, on top of that, there's the idea of the why. Why would you continue to play this deep? You know, are you chasing legacy from a championship perspective? Are you chasing legacy from a different perspective? Is there an entirely different reason why you continue to play? Brian Windhorse had a very interesting angle as to why we're going to continue to see LeBron James playing basketball. No sound here, but what we basically had was Windhorse stating that LeBron is interested in buying a franchise, as I don't think that's a secret to many people out there.
Right.
Interested in buying a franchise, and when you're stacking 50 mil every additional year you play, that goes a long way in trying to buy that franchise, Q.
No, it does. It does. But he also has the name and the cachet to be able to link up with whoever he needs to be able to go and buy that franchise that he eventually will. I have no doubt about it that he'll eventually buy a franchise. It'll eventually be played right where I'm standing, not right where I'm standing, but in the same vicinity, the same area code that I'm standing here in Las Vegas. I just have no doubt about it that that's what's going to go on. So, I can see why he's still playing to stack the money. But, I mean, with his name alone, he had already got all the cash value you need.
What do you think of him as a potential owner one day? We've watched him and we've dissected him as a player who has a lot of say in the coaches that are going to be representing his team and the players that will be surrounding him. Some of the decisions have been strong. Some of the decisions have been questionable. I mean, he is going to be on his 10th head coach going into, I believe, his 22nd NBA season. That's a lot of head coaches. A couple of them got fired midway through the season. A lot of them don't get a very long leash. I think the longest was 5 years that he had a coach for. In 22 seasons, he hasn't had a coach him for longer than 5 years. I think that says something when you look at Steph Curry and Steve Kerr, for example, in Golden State. But neither here nor there at the moment. As an owner, if you're tasked with making these personnel decisions, both general manager, coaching, player, how do you think that plays out?
I mean, that's a great question. And obviously, time will tell. I hope it's not very Jordan-like where it's, you know, you got to only employ the ones that you know really well and feel like, you know, that you could trust. And, you know, Jordan always hired the guys that were so close to him, but also would be like the yes guys, right? They would have no pushback as well. Ownership ain't for everybody, man. And you know, and it also depends on how much of a owner is he? Is he in position to make those kind of decisions? That's going to be another question that we obviously don't know until it happens.
I would imagine his goal is to be the 51% or higher owner. like the owner who's got the
But what if he teams up with like a guy like Shaq, or he teams up with, you know, his crew that he has now, the Boston crew? I mean, there's so many elements to this.
Fascinating to me, because when you bring up Jordan, you think about just what a disaster it was as an owner. I don't know if it was a disaster, because you turn around, you sell the franchise, you end up making money. But if you're LeBron, do you see him more as like a Jerry Jones type owner, like actively involved in everything? Or do you think of him as more of a hands-off, let the decision makers handle business? He doesn't strike me as a hands-off kind of guy.
No, he seems like a guy that wants to be very active. But again, I'm hoping that when he's active, he makes smart decisions and not Michael Jordan type decisions, because that was terrible.
Interesting question here. All the while, Boston was facing pressure this season as to how far they could go in the playoffs. But with Denver on the ropes, has the pressure been ratcheted up? Think about that for a second. We'll talk about it next. Q Myers, Joe Fordball, Carlin vs. Joe, ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Carlin vs. Joe podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Carlin vs. Joe weekdays from noon to 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on Sirius XM Channel 80. You can also watch and listen on the ESPN app. The Carlin vs. Joe podcast.